Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hub Arkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score's senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Hub Arkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena tomorrow as they take on Nebraska at 3:30 p.m. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com.
You're going to play the Hoibergs.
That's right, they are.
Ugh. Right?
I think, is Nebraska good?
I think so.
I don't know.
I saw the big profile on Fred in the
I always liked Fred.
Sun Times today.
I kind of miss Fred because the guy that replaced him is just awful.
Well,
no.
Yes.
Right?
I don't know. How much more would you like? We did a whole show about this yesterday.
We did.
I mean, it was literally 24 hours. We had just stopped.
Hub Arkish of Pro Football Weekly is on Twitter at @Hub_Arkish. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Hub.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
We're good. We're getting ready for a weekend. We sort of started the show looking at what's happening now in the NFL. As context for how we criticize the Bears and how we observe the Bears, because we have coaches hired and fired. We have general managers talking about their teams and new coaches talking about visions for their teams. And then right in front of us is the evidence of what good teams can do and how they get here. So what if any, conclusions can we draw from these playoff teams, these matchups this weekend, and what we're seeing around the league? Does it inform our awareness of the Bears anymore?
Well, it certainly raises some things to think about. I don't know how much it tells us about the Bears. There's one really interesting two statistics, I guess, that people, as soon as you say something decent about the Bears right now, everybody says, well, you know, you're homer, you're doing this, you're doing that. Sometimes those are the folks who need to take a step back and do some objective analysis. The Bears under Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, and we can talk about Pace's 5 years in the drafts and everything else, but under the last 2 years, in terms of answer to your question, are the Bears starting to arrive? They're 20-13. There are seven teams in the NFL who are as good or better. The more intriguing stat to me that we're not focused enough on is that they're 9-3 in the NFC North. They clearly should be at least 10-2, easily could be 12-0, and two of those teams are playing on divisional playoff, weekends. So I'm not saying that anything is great about where the Bears are at, but it's certainly not all that bad either. And then when you look at, I think it's the specifics of your question, if I've got this right, there is a clear trend back to the ground game. That's what has made these favorites this weekend and going towards the Super Bowl the favorites. It's not that you got to run the ball 70% of the time or even 50% of the time, but you got to be really good at it. That's what these teams, or at least most of these teams, have in common this weekend. And beyond that, what the Bears are trying to do is not that far off, because these teams all are attempting to have a defense like the Bears had last year. The only one that accomplished that was the Patriots, and they went out week one, but that was because of their offensive failings. And so do we want to compare the Bears to the Patriots? Certainly not organizationally, but where those teams are at right now. Now, they've got the answer if Brady comes back and they get the weapons around him. But the Bears have now made significant changes in the coaching staff, apparently aimed at trying to fix some of the run game problem. Now we'll see what they do personnel-wise, and they're really not that far away from the teams that we see having great success these last eight teams left.
Let's talk about some of the playoff teams and matchups here, and we'll start in the Bears division too. Green Bay, on defense adjusted value over average, DVOA by Football Outsiders, is apparently, for what it's worth, one of the worst 13-3 teams via DVOA that has ever been 13-3. I get everybody's looking at this team and saying that's not as good as they actually are, whether it's through metrics or just kind of the eye test. But I wonder what kind of chance you give them against Seattle, despite the fact that they've been kind of an up and down sort of ball club.
Well, you know, it's interesting that it comes out that way, Connor, because I don't think they're one of the worst of anything. I mean, they deserve to be 13-3, and they deserve credit for that. But all year long, people have been looking at them and saying, well, wait a minute, it doesn't look like a 13-3. I'm sorry, the dog just ripped my earpiece out. It doesn't look like a 13-3 piece.
Ow, you okay?
Yeah, I'm playing like the Bears right now. Okay. What can I tell you? It's come on, Molly, go. The Golden Retrievers get radio time, but Molly the Mutt just doesn't understand it. She just thinks she's supposed to be on the show, so forgive me for that. We're good now. We got her under control. You know, all year long, we've been saying they don't quite feel that good. You know, they certainly don't look like a championship team, and yet here they are. And ironically, some believe that the reason they're 13-3 is because of the defense. But the fact is, they've got great pass rush from the Smith brothers, if you will, Za'Darius and Preston. It was Preston leading the way until about week 11, week 12. Now Za'Darius is on fire. Other than that, you look at the Kenny Clark, maybe the best nose tackle in football. So your front is solid. But once you, you know, either avoid or slow that pass rush and then find a way to deal with Clark, this is a defense that can be had. So that said, Connor, specific answer to your question, I'm actually picking the Packers to win by a point or two.
Okay.
Well, you know, because the Seahawks are so flawed right now, too. If the Seahawks actually had the number four running game, which is what they are statistically, I'd be all over the Seahawks in this one. But without Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, you know, this whole beast mode off the couch after a year and a half thing is fun. But it's just not very good. Nope. You know, and Pete Carroll has said, well, you're going to see more of them this week. I don't know that that's a good thing. So you flip it around. I think the Packers defense is going to have problems, you know, with I don't know about having problems with Aaron Jones. I think if any team was suited to control or neutralize him with Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright, they can scheme to do that. And that is what Pete Carroll will do. But think of the irony of that. The Seahawks are going to try and win by forcing Aaron Rodgers to beat him. You know, and I think Aaron Rodgers is still capable of beating him. So that's the game I'm doing. I'm looking forward to it. You'll hear it here on The Score. I think it's going to be the closest of the games. I think it's going to be the most interesting because these teams are both flawed on defense. There will be some big plays. But I just can't go against the Packers and Aaron Rodgers at home on divisional playoff weekend against a team that, you know, it's got his own issues to deal with.
Who do you like in the Ryan Pace Bowl?
You know, a quick point. I can't remember if we talked about this Wednesday or not. It's only the Ryan Pace Bowl in Chicago. People outside
I know.
Yeah, people outside of Bears Nation could care less about these two quarterbacks playing it. You know, Dan, it's another interesting one, though, because going in, and again, I was in Houston last week on the sidelines. I saw this Texans team. I saw them get to 6 minutes left in the third quarter, shut out with 92 yards of total offense. They can look really feeble at times. But they went into Kansas City week six before Patrick Mahomes dislocated his knee, and they beat him straight up 31-24. Now, you know, Mahomes was playing on a gimpy ankle at that point before the knee injury, but he outstatted Deshaun Watson. That wasn't the story of the game. One of the big questions with the Texans is where is Will Fuller? You know, does he go or not go? Yeah. And he's not in, you know, DeAndre Hopkins league or even fellow Ohio State alum, you know, Michael Thomas. But when he adds that second dimension, it makes it a totally different offense. The issue I have with this one, though, is I think the Chiefs, we're always looking for that team that's got the momentum and is the hottest team, and everybody's talking about Baltimore. I think maybe it's Kansas City, the way they've played the last 5, 6, 7 weeks. The defense isn't the best in the league, but it's gotten much, much better. Mahomes appears healthy now. They've intentionally rested Shady McCoy coming into this, and even if he's not the difference on the ground, Damian Williams, nobody has more long, you know, big plays on the running game than he does. He's got, what, 84 and 91-yard touchdown runs this year. So the Houston team that I saw last week, if they don't go from the jump and play on the lead, I think this one could be over at halftime. I like the Chiefs a lot.
Heard Joe Fortenbaugh on in his regular hit with Mully and Haw saying that this really could be a blowout weekend, which would be unfortunate for those of us who don't really have a rooting interest that just love good, exciting, close football games, and it may be something other than what we've seen so far.
Well, and you get where he's coming from because three of the four teams are more than 7-point favorites, and they appear to be mismatches, but Then you look at what usually happens in these games. Look at what happened last weekend, and I have some hope that it could be better than that. I mean, you know, the biggest underdog, well, I guess Kansas City's the biggest underdog now. That line has moved, but it really was Minnesota. I gave Minnesota no chance last week going to New Orleans. That was the one blowout I predicted last week. And you saw what Minnesota did. And I'll tell you what, guys, that's the formula for beating the 49ers, too. And if they show up like they did last week in New Orleans, then I'm not at all convinced that they can't pull the upset there. I'm not picking them. I think the 49ers are the best team in the NFC. But I'm not looking for a rout at all. That's not the way the 49ers have played the game, you know. And, yeah, we're in love with Baltimore with good cause. They're the best team in the NFL right now. But, again, the formula that the Titans used to beat the Patriots last week is exactly what you want to do to try and keep Lamar Jackson and that offense off the field. So I think the favorites probably all win. I think the only one that could be a nail-biter is probably the Packers and the Seahawks. But I wouldn't be surprised if we get two or three really good games this weekend.
You know, now that we have a little bit more time to take a look at Joe Judge, the Giants hire as head coach, and he's had his opening press conference and said whatever it is that he had to say. What have you, in talking with your folk around the league, what have you learned about the new Giants head coach?
Connor, I've really liked that hire from the second they made it, and I think they may have been saved by, from themselves. You have to be impressed with Matt Rhule. He's that kind of guy. But the contract he got is insane. There's no justification. Well, the justification for it is he wasn't going to leave Baylor unless he got it, you know. And so if he was your guy, and David Tepper will tell you, he's the owner of the Panthers, he was our guy. But this is the guy who said the only job he would leave Baylor for was the Giants job. That was his dream job. Mm-hmm. After the Panthers made the silly offer, he allegedly gave the Giants a chance to match it. And they're too smart for that. And I think in Joe Judge, what they're doing there is they're replicating the Brian Flores hire in Miami. It's too early to anoint Brian Flores, but he's the first 5-11 coach in my memory that I would consider voting for Coach of the Year for winning five games with that team and the way he stabilized that after the awful start. He looks like he may be a pretty good football coach, and Judge is more of the same, just I think 3 years older, still just turned 38. He's either 37 or 38. And what I really love about him is he's a special teams guy. He's coach wide receivers too, but he's been the special teams coordinator there at one point or another. And special teams coaches do really well as head coaches in the NFL. I had heard nothing but good things about him prior to this hiring cycle. He was not a secret to teams around the NFL. And I got a hunch that the Giants may have been saved from themselves. And not that, I know Rhule may turn out to be a really good coach too. I'm not trying to be negative about him. But I really like the Judge hire. I think they've got a really interesting guy, and they've got the beginnings of some young talent to build around on that team on both sides of the ball. So we'll see what he can do.
The Bears have a new tight ends coach. He is Clancy Barone. I thought it was Clancy Brown at first. I thought it was going to be the voice of Mr. Krabs and the actor who played Byron Hadley in Shawshank Redemption. But alas, it is not. It is a longtime NFLer who apparently was the recruiting coordinator who found Ryan Pace at Eastern Illinois. You know, this is the football tentacles reach way back with this one. What do you know about him?
Well, there's a trend here. I mean, he and Castillo both, you know, veteran NFL coaches, been around the block a few times, certainly, you know how to fit in and be part of a coaching staff, certainly have good credentials. We don't know much about Kevin Gilbride other than that he was Kevin's senior. I don't think it was junior and senior, but his dad is the Kevin Gilbride, who, of course, Buddy Ryan took the famous swing at. I don't think he's the reason that Adam Shaheen hasn't become a good football player or that Trey Burton couldn't stay healthy. But, you know, he was a young coach. There wasn't much to know there. And Barone, you've got one of these crusty veterans who's developed some pretty good players at the position. I'm sure will understand his niche in the coaching staff. And so it feels like a pretty good hire. I assume they haven't given the title of run game coordinator to Juan Castillo, but he's had it in other places. And so I assume he'll get it. Nobody has confirmed this from the Bears, but a lot of different guys' sources are telling them that the reason that Helfrich and Heastand and Gilbride were the ones who went is that they were responsible for the run game. And so in this case, they've responded with a pretty good fit of guys who've done it before and who are going to execute it exactly the way the head coach wants it. And in fairness to Matt Nagy, guys, this is, I mean, I'm not saying this is the, you know, hire or fire year, extend or fire, none of that, but it certainly is a pivotal year in his development. The one great success, the one disappointment, can he get it turned around? Even though, you know, Harry Hiestand is an outstanding coach, and we don't know much about Hilfrich or Gilfride, he needs to have a staff around that he's comfortable with. It needs to be something that is working the way he wants to, and he's apparently going to be more comfortable with these guys, so I give him the benefit of the doubt on these hires until, you know, we see the results.
With all the hires around the offensive coordinator position and not the offensive coordinator position, does each one kind of make you think more and more there won't be your traditional offensive coordinator?
One thing that the Bears under Ryan Pace, and Matt Nagy has become part of this, and it may be a reason that Nagy was Ryan's choice, one thing about the Bears is that they are about as buttoned up as any organization you're going to find. And we can't get, or I can't, and I'm not reading anybody else, so I'll say we can't really get much of a feel for what they're ever thinking strategically. There's been nothing said by Matt Nagy, because this is his decision, about it one way or the other. I think the Pat Shurmur stuff is more just people looking for anybody he has a connection with, since the connection to Castillo was obvious. I don't know that he's even a good fit. So I don't know. It's 50-50. I wouldn't be disappointed or surprised if they gave Dave Ragone the title and made him offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. That's not that unusual around the NFL. Maybe Brad Childress, who has been both head coach and offensive coordinator, takes on an expanded role. I don't see anybody else on the staff stepping up and getting more, although I guess they could make Juan Castillo an assistant head coach offense. Interesting thing about Castillo, guys, is that 24-year NFL veteran, with 22 of those years coaching offensive linemen. But in Philadelphia, after 3 years of coaching the offensive line, that was, I mean, I recall this, Andy Reid made him the defensive coordinator.
Yep.
And so obviously this is a fairly well-balanced, you know, very capable individual. And maybe they just spread all those responsibilities around. Somebody's going to have a title, whether it be offensive coordinator, assistant head coach, offense. But I'd say it's 50-50 right now as to whether or not he's already on the staff or he comes from the outside.
Hub, you want to take some phone calls?
Oh, love to.
All right, well, let's do that. Let's load up the phones. 312-644-6767. That is how you get to Hub. Questions about the playoffs, about the Bears, about the NFL. He is here for you. This segment brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. It is you. It is Hub. It is next on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
More football with Hub Arkish here on Bernstein and McKnight. First segment was us and Hub. The second segment belongs to you. 312-644-6767. Still a line or two open if you want to talk with the editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
And we are going to start with the familiar voice of Frank in Oak Park on The Score with Hub. Hey, Frank.
Hi, guys. Hub, I have a free agency question for you. I heard a segment, and I believe it was McNeil and Parkin's show, projecting tight ends Hunter Henry of the Chargers and Eric Ebron of the Colts as likely targets for the Bears in free agency. And while both players have an injury history, Henry lost the 2018 season with a knee problem and had a smaller knee issue this season. Ebron had to shut it down after 12 weeks this year with a bum ankle. Neither team has a 1A alternate on the roster ready to step up. In addition, the Chargers and Colts are projected by OverTheCap.com to have respectively about $56 and $93 million in space for 2020. So if these teams want to keep these guys, they can. Hub, if the Bears were to get either of these guys signed, and they are healthy, they would instantly be the number two target behind Allen Robinson for Mitch or whoever starts at QB. Do either Henry or Ebron have off-field peccadilloes or front office issues that make them radioactive in their current spots? Otherwise, I think it's a pipe dream either wears orange and blue in 2020.
Well, you know, Frank, I think the wild card in here is that in the case of Hunter Henry, who is a legit number one Y tight end, his injury history ever since he got to the Chargers is, I mean, he's not Tyler Eifert, but he's not that far behind. And so I think they would love to keep him, but they may be leery about a long-term big money deal. Eric Ebron comes with some different issues. He was a failed first-round draft choice in Detroit. Remember, 4 years and never did a thing. And then he gets to Indianapolis in 18 and puts 10 touchdowns on the board and then gets hurt this year. And I don't know that Ebron is the complete Y package that you want. I mean, he is a Y tight end, but probably a better receiver than a pass catcher. I think either would be a huge upgrade for the Bears. I think because really of their on-field histories, not their off-field histories, they're not going to break the bank. I don't think either one's going to become the highest paid tight end in football. But they're going to cost money. I think the Bears know they need to spend money at that position. So it wouldn't be stunning to me if the Chargers kept Henry or the Colts kept Ebron, but I'd say it's probably 50-50 at least, maybe better than 50-50 that they get a crack at the free agent market. Henry is the better player. There's no doubt about that, but he's the bigger risk because of his injury history.
Next up is Greg in Griffith. He's on the Score with Hub.
Hi. Hey, I got a question for you guys. Hub, you take a team like what the Bears did. They come out and had a great season. The next year, they kind of fell off the table. What is the history in the NFL of them coming back in their third season? How can we predict how it's going to go for them in 2020 with the reflection of other teams have been in this situation?
Greg, it's an interesting question, and I want to do some digging for you on it. I can give you a general answer, but what intrigues me about the question is I tried to warn Bears fans all through the spring and summer, the history of worst to first teams in that year two after being in last place is awful. Coming into the season, there had been 27 worst to first teams going back to 2001. Only seven of them had made the playoffs in the year after they finished first. Only three had won a playoff game. And only one had gone to the Super Bowl. And that was, interestingly enough, the Bears, who went worst to first in 04 to 05 into the Super Bowl in 06. Now, when I say that, of the 27, only 25 had that history. We didn't know what the Bears and Texans were going to do. Obviously, the Texans back in the playoffs again. The Bears not. I can tell you that in the third year, it is roughly 50-50 that those teams become competitive again. It turns out that about half of them were flukes and half of them did not know how to respond to their great success. Which one the Bears are, we shall see. And I will just keep listening to Dan and Connor, and I'll get the exact numbers for you, you know, within the next few days.
Next up is Mike in Rockford. He's on with Hub. What's up, Mike?
Good morning, guys. Hey, Hub, I want to ask you, I know I had said last week when I called, or 2 weeks ago, about the Vikings and the New Orleans, and you kind of said you were shocked that New Orleans lost. And I'm just looking at this scenario for what's left in the playoffs. I think on the NFC side, if I think you would agree with the roster that the Vikings have and their potential, and you had said earlier in the season that they were the much better team than Green Bay was as far as having a stronger roster, I think if they get hot here, if they do beat San Francisco, do you potentially think it's possible for them to go to Lambeau and then beat the Packers on the road? And it is hard for a team. These two teams knew each other a lot. Obviously, they play in the same division. Do you see it as a potential possibility that they can be dangerous? Thanks, and I'll hang up and listen.
Well, Mike, they're already dangerous. Yeah, I mean, they've pulled the huge upset going into New Orleans. And, yes, they do have a deeper roster. They have fewer holes to fill. I think most importantly, their running game matches the Packers with Dalvin Cook to Aaron Jones, and their defense is much better than the Packers. And they went into Lambeau about midseason and outplayed the Packers. They pushed them all over the field. The Packers got out to a 21-zip lead, I think, in the first quarter, and then the Vikings dominated the game for three quarters. So there's no question that if they're playing their best football, they can compete with the Packers and beat them and do it in Lambeau. Now, they have become an indoor team in the last couple of years. We know what the conditions are going to be like up there. That is a factor. But I don't think that the Packers like playing in those conditions any more than their visitors do. It is what it is. So the answer to your question is absolutely. I mean, it would be really stunning going into the playoffs. If anybody had predicted we were going to end up with a Packer-Viking title game in Green Bay. But if you think back, that's what happened in 2010. You know, even though the Bears were the number two seed, I want to say. But nobody saw that matchup coming. And the Vikings, the Packers as the visitor, came in here and beat the Bears. So, yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Again, I'm not dismissing the Vikings this week the way I did last week. I do think they have a real shot. But the 49ers are still the best team in the NFC until the Vikings or somebody else does knock them off.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena tomorrow as they take on Nebraska at 3:30 p.m. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. This is NIU Dave in Woodridge on The Score with Hub.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hub, I wanted to ask about the end of the New Orleans-Minnesota game and the pass interference, no pass interference call. The rule says now that as part of the scoring replay, the booth official can actually make a determination on that. Is that correct?
The booth official can call for a replay on anything that is replayable. So,
which pass interference is?
Yeah, so the answer to your question, it's not the booth official who's going to make the call, but he can stop the game and cause the replay.
Okay, so Al Riveron, I think, tweeted right after the game that they didn't believe it was enough to merit a penalty. Two questions for you. One, has the NFL said anything more about that play? And the second question, have the Saints put out anything? Have they protested or filed anything with the league? Thanks a lot, guys.
No, I mean, there's no reason to. They dismissed it at the time. They made a statement. Saints fans can bitch all they want, but you know, this is not last year. This was not the blatant missed call that last year was. You know, and nothing's going to come of it. I mean, the league was less than thrilled when Saints fans filed a class action lawsuit last year. Obviously, Saints fans can do whatever they want. But I'm not even sure how I feel about the call, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I
thought it was a foul.
Yeah, Connor and I sort of argued about this. I think there was some pushing going on both sides. There was contact initiated both directions, and we fixated on that because of the way it's... I don't know how much of an advantage he gained that was material in affecting the play.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line, guys, is that you have to put it in the context of the way they're enforcing this rule.
That's true.
And the rule was a knee-jerk reaction to a huge problem. It was a stupid decision. They can't continue this. I mean, don't make it the rule and then refuse to call it. Just say every time, okay, now we looked at it, we're going to leave it pass interference.
Amen.
Which in essence is what they've done. You know? So unless the problem with it is that different officials call it different ways. And I think Dan is on it. There was contact both ways, you know, and so that almost immediately eliminates any hope you have as the offensive team of getting that call. Had there not been contact or hand fighting, then, Connor, I would agree with you because there clearly was some interference at the end, but the way they call this penalty, you get away with that a lot, and so I don't see any way they could have overturned it.
312-644-6767, still time for you and an open line or two for you to jump on with a question or a comment for Hub Arkish. Next is Otto in Brookfield on The Score. Hello, Otto.
Hello, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hub wanted to ask about Juan Castillo and his addition to the Bears coaching staff. I see he was last O-line coach for the Buffalo Bills in 2018. They had McCoy and Ivory. I think McCoy got hurt, but their style of blocking, was it more of a zone style? Are we going to see the power scheme, or is this are we continuing to move away from the power scheme and what he standard coached? Just curious what you know about him, what your thoughts are now that they've made that change. Thanks for taking my call. Bye.
Well, Otto, all of these coaches, Harry Hiestand, Juan Castillo, you know, name your guy, the legendary Alex Gibbs, they can coach power or zone. They have to exist in the league. I think Harry had more experience with a power game. Castillo has experience with both. They were not running the true zone read back in the Philadelphia days when he was there. Nobody was. I shouldn't say nobody was, but it's developed a lot more in the last decade. In Buffalo, Sean McDermott preferred a power game. Juan Castillo, ironically, was a victim of the same thing that Harry Hiestand was. Buffalo didn't have the talent up front, and that's why he got let go after the 18 season. You know, he certainly is capable of running either, but he is going to lean more towards this the zone read RPO run game style. Olin and I were talking about this yesterday. We've got Olin sitting in on the Pro Football Weekly TV show these days now that Wani is out. And he pointed out you've got most of the teams this weekend running that zone read RPO type run game, and they're having tremendous success with it. It is what the Vikings are doing with Dalvin Cook. It is what the 49ers are doing with all those running backs. It's what the Packers are doing with Aaron Jones. You know, you think of the 49ers, you talk about how physical they are, and yet you look at the playbook, this is what they're doing. And so that is clearly what Castillo is going to be asked to do here. And as we said at the top of the show, he's a veteran quality coach who should be fine and is going to have the same problems that Harry Hiestand had unless they get him some upgrades in talent at a few spots.
In Des Plaines, this is Jim on Sports Radio 670.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know what you thought of Taysom Hill from the Saints and how the Saints utilize him, if you think that's a good fit. And if Mitch doesn't make it as the starter, could you see the Bears using him in a similar way? Thanks.
Well, Jim, those are two different questions. You know, I mean, I could see any team using him in a similar way, but he's not the quarterback there. So there's no relationship to Mitch in the question of the conversation because, you know, Mitch is here to be your starting franchise quarterback. Does Taysom Hill have the ability to be a starting quarterback in the NFL? I don't think Sean Payton and the Saints think he does, or Teddy Bridgewater wouldn't have been the most expensive number two in the league. So I'd certainly love to have Taysom Hill on my team. I think he's a dynamic weapon. But to come in and be my franchise quarterback, we've seen nothing to suggest that he's able to do that.
Who's a comp for Taysom Hill? I'm trying to think. Do we have to go back to like when was it Jim Jensen on the Dolphins, like punter tight end?
That was a thing.
I know Bob Parsons of the Bears was a tight end and a punter. And I'm just wondering the last sort of Swiss Army knife kind of guy to be used to do all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't remember any of them, to be honest. I mean, Johnny Hecker, the punter with the Rams, is the best passing punter in the NFL. He'll do it, but not lining up at the position. I mean, you know, the Wildcat has kind of skewed that because now we envision running backs and wide receivers lining up there. But I'm hard-pressed to remember. I mean, I guess Tim Tebow could have and should have been.
Right. Pat White a little bit, yeah, although he didn't do the special team stuff.
No, well, Hill. Yeah, I mean, Hill is he's just a monster athlete.
Yeah.
He's a football player. But the Saints tended to think his future was actually a tight end. So I can't really come up with a comp to that. I mean, that type of player, although not necessarily under center, is Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, I mean, he's not going to line up to throw the ball. But you talk about a guy who can play running back, play wide receiver. He's the best special teams player in the league. You can do a lot of things with him, but in terms of that, the quarterback or the passing aspect of it, Hill's kind of one of a kind, I think.
Luke is in Janesville. He's next on the score.
Hi there. Thanks, guys, for taking my call. Just wanted to ask you a quick question, Hub, on the quarterback situation of the Bears. Just a few days ago, Ryan Pace had said that Trubisky will be the starter in 2020. Just want to know what your thoughts on that are, and if you think by chance Ryan Pace is just trying to keep the confidence of Trubisky up, and if you think they will get another quarterback to bring in to compete with Trubisky. Thanks a lot, guys.
You know, Jim, let's be real clear about what Ryan Pace said. He didn't say he will be the starter in 2020. He said he is our starter. And what that meant is going into the offseason, you know, probably going into the first mini camps and OTAs, he is our starter. He also said we want competition everywhere. He pointed out that he's got two free agent quarterbacks, and to me made clear he's going to bring new quarterbacks. And I think it is certainly reasonable to assume, if I was a betting man and I could get decent odds, I would bet that Mitch will start the opening game of the 2020 season. But we keep trying to hang Ryan Pace out to dry on this, like he's refusing to see the light of day and he's refusing to admit his mistake and he's refusing this and refusing that. He said the things he had to say at his season-ending press conference. I think it's fair to be a little troubled that he seemed to believe some of those things a little more than some other people do. But I think he also clearly said he gets that they've got to fix it and that he is going to bring in competition. So until we know who that competition is, I can't tell you much more about it. If it is a Marcus Mariota or a Jameis Winston, then I think Mitch is likely to win that competition. Now, on the other hand, if they bring in a Case Keenum or a Matt Moore, or if a Ryan Tannehill becomes available, that's a guy who has been a starting quarterback in the league with some success, and they may be, you know, at least at that point, Mitch has to be pushed a little bit more to hang on to that job. I do think they're going to draft a developmental young quarterback, but that's a couple years away. So it certainly seems likely that Mitch Trubisky is the Bears' starting quarterback on opening day of 2020. But I don't, I mean, I'm there every day. I have not heard Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy rule out any possibility that they would consider anything else. And that's kind of the way some Bears fans are treating that. And I don't think that's the case.
Frank at Orland Park, you're on the Scores Ahead of Hub.
Hey, Hub, how you doing?
Good, Frank. Thanks.
Good. Hey, I just have a question. With the all the major conferences and all the terrific linemen that they seem to have at these big schools, why is it so difficult to get, like, two guys that are good linemen in the NFL on your team?
Well, I mean, it's not that difficult for a lot of teams. I mean, even the Bears, I think that Cody Whitehair and James Daniels can be Pro Bowlers in the right positions for a number of years to come. I've seen enough of James Daniels to think he can be a special center. I think Cody Whitehair can probably play any position on the offensive line, but guard is his best. And I think that those are two, you know, really good offensive linemen. You just got to figure out where to put them and who to put around them. I'm intrigued by Alex Bars. I don't know about the Rashad Coward, experiment. I mean, Kyle Long, if not for the injuries, was one of the best linemen in football. They would have had three. So it's not that it's that hard, I guess. The answer to your question is it's not that hard. The Bears just haven't done it and haven't gotten their evaluations correct. And by the way, you're not going to have five. You're not going to have the Cowboys. Even the Cowboys' offensive line isn't now what it was 2 years ago. But I think Bobby Massey, if he stays healthy, is fine at right tackle. He's a good run blocker. He does need some help in pass protection once in a while. They've got to fix the left tackle position, and they have to find a second guard, whether that is one of these kids they're trying to develop or they got to bring in somebody else.
All right, Hub, have fun this weekend.
Thanks, Hub.
Appreciate your time.
All right, thanks, guys. You have a great weekend, too.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.